Hello and welcome to The Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeltman. Today's episode is sponsored by An Event Apart, the design conference for people who make websites. An Event Apart is an intensely educational three-day learning session for passionate practitioners of standards-based web design. If you care about code as well as content, usability as well as design, An Event Apart is the conference you've been waiting for. Founded by Eric Meyer and myself, that's Jeffrey Zeltman, and dedicated to the proposition that the creators of great web experiences deserve a great learning experience, An Event Apart brings together 12 of the leading minds in web design for 3 days of nonstop inspiration and enlightenment. For more information and a schedule of all 8 Event Apart events in 2013, visit aneventapart.com. Okay, that's the sponsor's message. And we have a really great show today because with us is the very talented, very brilliant Mr. Chris Coyer. He is the founder of CSS Tricks, the founder of CodePen. He does a podcast. He's an awesome guy, developer, designer, writer, you name it, multi-talent. Great guy. So, Chris, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Pleasure. How are you doing today?
I'm doing spectacular. How are you?
I'm doing great. You started, I guess CSS Tricks is how most people know you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably if you've ever heard of me, it's through that, just because that's the thing I've kind of been doing the longest. Yeah.
You started around 2007?
That's right. So it's a little over 5 years old.
Now, I started A List Apart because I liked what I was reading on other sites of back in the 90s, but nobody was writing about exactly what I wanted to read. So I just started mm-hmm. my own magazine. Was that your motivation as well?
It was. Yeah, I mean, yes, I like writing about the web. I think the start of CSS Tricks was a little more, I don't know, humdrum than that or something. It was kind of a play. You remember a blog called, it was Darren Rose, I think it's still around today, Pro Blogger, where he basically talks about being a professional blogger and how you can make money doing that these days. It was honestly part of that. I was like, this is cool. I like that this guy is able to make money blogging. And I started. Now,
you were making money as a developer, right?
And which, yeah, just because I was employed.
Right. Okay. But you said, this is for, how did you develop your writing talent? Did you always write?
I don't think that I'm particularly good at it still, but it was just through attrition, you know?
Wait a minute. If you can write about CSS, and people can understand what you're saying. Just on that level, that makes you a good writer.
Right? Well, this stuff. Thanks. I'm not trying to be too modest or anything. I mean, I'm okay. a little, but yeah. Okay. So that's it.
But you didn't. Let's just say this: when you were in school, nobody ever said, "Oh, don't let this guy near a pencil. He can't write."
No.
You didn't. You weren't an English major, but you know. Yeah. So you read. I wasn't actually unfamiliar with that. I mean, I remember that period, though, in the mid-2000s where people were getting excited about blogging and some people were, like, selling blogs to AOL or Yahoo or something.
Yeah, exactly. There was all that. That was the period. That was right. The period. And interest in the CSS world, it was – I feel like the vibe was a little bit more like, who's writing about CSS anymore? Everything that's been has been written about. And I was like, I will.
That's fascinating. Okay, right. So it's really interesting because that was around the same time that List Apart, I started saying, let's realign List Apart. Let's broaden our focus, be more holistic. And because I was afraid that a List Apart was becoming here's another amazing thing you can do with CSS kind of magazine. Yeah, sure. And I was like, we're going to run out of that stuff. And, you know, and to me, it was like, well, we did sliding doors. There was a lot of, we did, you know, CSS sprites. I mean, we did it. I mean, brilliant writers contributed this stuff. We were just lucky enough that they contributed it to us. I was like, this is going to run out and people are going to get tired of it. And I'm getting tired of it. So, but in fact, people aren't getting tired of it and you haven't run out at all.
Not these days we haven't, but back then. Maybe a little bit more because the web was moving a little slower back then. And
you
set the bar pretty high. I mean, sliding doors is pretty cool. You can't publish something that smart twice a month or whatever.
That is, well, Douglas Bowman set that bar pretty high, right? But and Dave Shea with Mark Newhouse. But anyway, yeah, you're right. I mean,
It and seemed I set like, the bar pretty low on my side. I was just like, here's how you absolutely position a little PNG in the corner of the page. Because I just didn't know as much. This was all new to me. I wasn't right. at Doug Bowman's level at the time. So I'm like, let me write for total newbies because I'm a total newbie. And that resonated with a certain new group of people coming up in web design, I think.
Yep, absolutely. It was interesting because like when I started, like I was writing Ask Dr. Webb in 1995, it was the same thing. I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I know a little bit. I know maybe more than the person reading this. I have like one day more experience than they do. So that makes
yeah.
me. Yeah.
That's a big deal. That's why I think in new bloggers, there's a certain attitude where people are afraid to blog because of they're worried that everybody already knows this stuff. And it's nice when you're like, no, they don't. At least some people don't.
You still, even though, so if I started in 1995, someone who started in 2007 to me is like, oh yeah, the web's all done. And, mm-hmm. you know, but to you, when you started, the web still, in fact, to the public, to most people, starting in 2007 really makes you a pioneer. Because really, really, people didn't, it wasn't until Facebook and Twitter that ordinary people started finally using the internet to communicate. And yeah. and if you were publishing your own stuff on the internet in 2007, you truly are a pioneer. So that's cool. And so it's interesting that you said these days, because I think...
Things change. Things are moving a little faster, certainly. There's a little bit more stuff starting to come out that's a little more like sliding doors level of usefulness and stuff. Like
constantly.
Yeah.
Well, so here's the thing. Like John Gruber bet on Apple, and he bet on Apple in the 90s when everyone was saying, oh, Apple's dead, right? And the folks at are you familiar with Icon Factory?
Twitterific
and all that.
He was on this show, wasn't he?
Okay. And so, right. And so, you know, they bet on Apple. And, you know, at the time when they did that, it was like, wow. They didn't bet like we're going to make a lot of money because Apple's going to turn around, but they liked Apple and they liked Apple's products and they didn't care that it wasn't popular and seemed to be dying. They were just like, well, we're fans. We're going to hang in there. And now it turns out like that was a good decision, right? It was a good decision for John Gruber. I think in the same way, around the time I said, ah, CSS, man, there's nothing left to say. Let's start broadening a list apart. And you said, hey, CSS looks pretty cool. Turns out to have been a very good bet because we got CSS 3 and HTML 5, and there's lots of stuff to write about now, lots of stuff to think about.
Yeah, that's a nice analogy. You can compare me to Gruber all you want.
Okay, cool. No. So, how do you go about creating content for CSS Tricks? Because, you know, content's a bear.
Yeah, well, I've always, until very recently with CSS Tricks, it's always been a side project. It hasn't been a full-time job for me. And so I would do other work too. I worked at WooFoo for a number of years. I worked at SurveyMonkey after we got bought. Before those, I worked at just a regular agency. So most of my day was whatever my full-time employment was. And that really fueled most of what I wrote about on CSS Tricks. Like, this is what I was working on during the day. And this interesting problem came up and it turned into an article. Really, everything I do to this day can ultimately be recycled into some kind of story or article or something for CSS Tricks.
And yeah, I mean, for as much as you're downplaying your experience and as much as you're saying, well, you know, I really didn't know what it was. I mean, you write for Smashing Magazine. You're teaching a theme course for a WordPress theme course for lynda.com.
Yeah, that was a couple years ago now, but that was pretty cool.
I mean,
yeah.
That's Lynda.com is Lynda knows her stuff, and she hires really good people and puts out very high level of educational stuff.
That was cool. That was worth doing. If anybody's on the fence about working with Lynda.com,
did you fly out there to do the?
Totally. It's like north of LA. They have a building and, you know, really like fancy sound booths and stuff and like chairs that you sit in that are so well oiled that you just can sit down in them and they make no sound whatsoever because it's pretty fancy.
What's the name of that? Ahoya or what's the name?
Is that the city?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was terrible. I just talked about it the other day and I couldn't remember what the name of the city was.
I think it's like a Native American name. Like Oaxaca or something.
lots of fruit fields, and it was right on the ocean. That sounds about right. It was really a neat experience.
That sounds fantastic.
It takes a week to shoot. Took, you know, I had to fly out there for a whole week and kind of, you know, you have like one contact where you go with and they kind of like guide you through the whole thing. And they're kind of your mentor through the process.
Are you going to do it again?
Probably not. As much as I speak highly of it now, it was also a very, very stressful week. Sure. You really got to hit everything perfectly. And, you know, and it took a lot out of me. And I, you know, I also shoot videos for CSS Trick. So as much as it was cool and it, you know, honestly, they pay pretty well too. It was like worth it financially to do it. I like making content that is part of my own little, you know, empire, for lack of a better word. So even if I wouldn't make as much money doing it for myself, I think long term, it makes the most sense for me to make stuff for my own sites.
We're the same. We're the same that way. Fortunately, not everyone feels that way, right? Because if everyone felt that way, well, actually, it would be kind of cool. If everyone felt that way, then we'd really have the robust blogosphere we once had. That everybody would just be kicking ass on their website.
True, true. But it's not, yeah, I mean, you were saying it would just be hard to find writers then, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'd be selling pencils.
Sure.
When did you start Shop Talking? Was it a natural evolution from CSS Tricks, or what did it come out of?
It was, but I've been on a guest on a few podcasts, you know, before, and I love every time I'm on a podcast. You know, it's so fun. We get to like, you know, talk with like-minded people. You know, it's like why people go to conferences, because it's fun. It's rare that we get to like hang out with so many people that are like to talk about the same stuff we talk about. And I just was sad every time they ended. I was like, oh, I want to talk about this forever. So I secretly wanted to do one, but also the amount of work it takes to do one all by yourself is too much between all this scheduling, recording and, you know, finding sponsors and stuff. And that's all just behind the scenes. And there's the actual right. recording of it and the post-producing. It was too much. I knew I couldn't handle it myself.
How did you find Dave Rupert?
He found me. I secretly in the back of my mind was like, next person asked me to be a kind of a co-host on their show, I'm going to say yes. And fortunately that person was Dave. He's like, hey, you want to do a podcast? I'm like, yes, absolutely. Let's do it. It wasn't much more to it than that. And he's like, okay, let's buy a domain name and start doing it. And we just learned along the way.
Do you use Call Recorder?
I think he does. Yeah, I do too. I'm looking at the little Call Recorder window right now.
Me too. Wait, are we both recording this?
I didn't hit the button. I should have, though, just in case. That's I shouldn't have told the audience that.
What if I edit this, like, evilly?
I trust you.
Okay, but you won't be able to go back to the raw tapes.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not the editor. I 5x5. The wonderful people at 5x5 do that.
Right. So you're able to do this because some of that behind the scenes stuff is kind of taken care of, right?
It's a ton of work. When you let's go to sponsors. I mean, you have sponsors on your podcast and you have sponsors on CSS Tricks for people who are thinking, yeah, I could do that too. I can write a blog. I'm a newbie. I'll write about. What's involved in lining up sponsors and how
totally interesting. That's, and you do it too. So you could talk about just as much as I could, but, and you're fortunate to be able to sponsor some of your like kind of cross pollinate here. Right. So the opening sponsor was an Event Apart, right. Which is also you. That's cool.
Or sad. It might be sad.
No, I think it's great. I can't wait till the day that the sole sponsor of Shop Talk Show could be CodePen. You know, I think that would be fabulous. In the early days, I just had no idea. I didn't even know that any advertiser would ever want on to the show. Or I experimented with AdSense a little bit. You know, you put the little JavaScript from Google on there and it puts some gross looking ads on your site and you kind of hope that enough people click on them that it's a bunch of money someday, but it never really works out that way. And eventually I removed them because they were so gross looking that I just couldn't look at them anymore. So I just rolled with no ads for a while until I got an email from a company that says, hey, we want to pay you directly to advertise. And it was one of those services that converts your Photoshop file into HTML.
Yeah. What did you do?
I said yes. and allowed that. They were my primary sponsor for a very long time, and I was a little conflicted about it because eventually they're not on the site anymore. But that was, you know, years later. They just have, apparently those businesses do so well. They just have seemingly endless pockets. It's really bizarre. Because I don't use those services. I don't think anybody that reads CSS Tricks is too interested in using that, because they're trying to be, I mean, that's what I'm trying to train people to do, is do it themselves.
Do you think that they were running ads on your content to try to recruit people to do the work, or?
I don't think so. I don't think your average, I just don't know.
You know what?
Somebody needs to do an expose on these companies, because it would be totally fascinating, I think, to find out who writes all that HTML and CSS.
Yeah, who is doing it? Because you or I couldn't, even if we wanted to, even if we said, hey, that's a great business model, I'm ethically in favor of it, I don't think we could afford, I don't think they would pay someone who's going to turn a CSS file around like an hour later for $5. I don't think they're going to pay me to do, right?
So it's some kind of, like, our minds tend to go to, it's some kind of like sweatshoppy kind of thing, right? Or it's in a
there
some
are like
in,
child laborers in Vietnam.
who are like pretty good at CSS. I shouldn't laugh at that, but it just seems so absurd and weird to me that's probably what's going on here. Or you know, even if you really love CSS and love the churn of just new challenges every day, I'd still think you would burn out on them. Anyway, that would be an interesting journalistic pursuit.
There was a new thing a while ago that's not like that, but it's sort of, it's halfway between that and what we think of as a studio.
Make $5 for a change kind of thing or whatever.
Yeah. It was $25 for a change. They charge $25 for a change. And the idea would be, you know, I guess your start. I don't think that's children in a sweatshop. I think that one is, you're an Australian, let's say, Australian web developer, and you've got about, 60% of your hours covered, but you've got 40% of your hours where you're like, how am I going to pay my rent this month? Or how am I going to, clean my child's teeth? And so they throw extra work your way, and you can just look at it as, I mean, we've all done that. Well, certainly if you've freelanced, you've been the recipient or donor of, hey, I don't really want this gig, or I can't, this, they want such and such, but I'm not quite right for it, but I think you might be. And it's kind of like that, only someone's made a business of making those connections.
It sounds clever, and $25 is a good enough number, I feel like, that people could probably like do a couple of them in 1 hour and make like a pretty decent amount of money. But how do they like make sure that those requests are fair? I don't know.
And how do they make sure that the work is quality and all that?
Mm-hmm. That's tough.
People used to say early on when I was doing this, people would say, you ought to, someone ought to set up a certification for web developers. And I would just say, how? I mean, to me, that's like setting up a certification for filmmakers. Like, there's certain baseline things that you need to know, but.
Yeah, like it makes sense that plumbers have that, because it just changes a lot slower, and there's just certain things you will know and they'll be right forever. But there's art involved.
There's art. I mean, even the semantics is an art, and folks like us can have long friendly arguments about, that really shouldn't be a list, or how do you mark up a poem. Right? Is a paragraph tags really right for a poem? Is break okay for a poem? I mean, why? So
if you got some degree, like the chances of you being, it's like you're almost probably worse at it, because you are like dogmatic about the things that you were taught to get your certification instead of.
That's very true. I think certification is kind of product focused to me. Like if you could get Microsoft certified in .NET, or in theory, Adobe could, back in the day, Adobe could have certified you as a Photoshop expert or something. That would kind of make sense, because if they make the product and they say, every 3 months you're going to have to learn the new version of the product and be recertified, I guess that kind of thing would make sense. But HTML is free, and it's nobody owns it. And
It does make a little bit more sense, but I could see really good programmers taking offense to that too, being like, no, no, sir. Code is art. Code is poetry.
Exactly. Code is poetry. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's possible to certify anyone in any of the things that we do. That's why do you think we're ever going to have a...
No.
Photo?
That's one of the many reasons we're offended by W3 schools, because they try to do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm also... Yeah, there's lots of reasons. But that's one of the reasons. I mean, I love what Adobe's... I love the new direction Adobe's going in, but I just don't believe that you're ever going to be able to have a layout product for the web that works the way you or I or anyone listening to this
actually works.
Right. Yeah. It just can't. Mm-hmm. It can't.
I agree. And I also want to eat my words on agreeing with you someday.
I'd be happy too.
Yeah.
If they could do a layout engine that was responsive and fluid and semantic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's probably a cross between a code editor and stuff, you know, because to remove ever looking at HTML is probably not going to happen, but the output view, I don't know.
So it's kind of like Dreamweaver then, right? Where you go back and forth.
Yeah.
But just, well, just taking the layout of CSS tricks. Mm-hmm. I mean, you conceived of that as a responsive layout. And it's clear that it's not like, to me, looking at it, it's clear you didn't go, here's the master comp, and then here are some variations. To me, you designed it kind of in the code.
Yep. And Photoshop was a part of it, but it was more for like little quick explorations. So there is definitely not a Photoshop master comp from this I worked from. But.
Or you could use Photoshop, like before you use CSS3 to do a gradient, you might use Photoshop to figure out what gradient you want.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. What is CodePen? And that looks like a community. What's the deal?
Yeah. So many people in our industry have heard of JS Fiddle. It's a super cool little product. You go to jsfiddle.net, right?
And it's a code sharing thing, right? Like a sort of a...
There's four boxes on the page. You write HTML in one, CSS in one, JavaScript in one, and it shows you them, squishes them into an iframe and shows you the result of it. It's really super useful for just showing people a bug or showing somebody a cool little demo or working out a little problem for yourself. It's great. I'm a big fan of JS Fiddle. I also wanted to...
Wow, it's even got a lint for JavaScript and a tidy function for HTML.
Totally. And you can load up any JavaScript library you want if you want to write in that and add external resources and stuff. I use JS Fiddle all the time. I'm a fan. And but I also kind of like, I wish I could put all my demos in JS Fiddle, because it's like if you go to CSS Tricks and then you can browse like the downloads and demos area and stuff.
Right.
I wish all those were in JS Fiddle, because it's just a more compelling experience. You can see all the code and play with the code yourself and make changes.
Yeah.
But I also didn't want to like rely on them as a third party to host all that stuff. So what I set out to do was just kind of basically rewrite JS Fiddle, but just put it on my own site instead of their site. You know, like, thanks, JS Fiddle, you're great, but I just want to reinvent it how I want to reinvent. I think I can do just as good of a job or better, but kind of self-hosted.
See, I'm amazed and impressed. I know you're just one guy, but this is amazing and impressive to me, because like, I've got several of the smartest people I know. We talk about this for a list apart all the time. Like, we have demos and we have codes and we show the code, and just, you know, having a CMS that shows code and still letting people post code in comments. I mean, you know, like how tricky that can be. And just
so tricky. Yeah.
So for you to have a tool that improves the way, and so you've incorporated this right into CSS Tricks.
Yeah, I mean, that's a work in progress. Okay. So now every blog post I write that does have code in, I use this to post it, and I go back through old demos and move them over and stuff. But it evolved since those early days. Instead of it being a part of CSS Tricks, it was like, this is really compelling to just put on its own place. And it turned into, you know, and I'm not afraid to say this, really, it's a little bit like Dribbble, but just for code.
Dribbble for code. No, I get it.
Yeah, so it's just instead of screenshots, it's little iframes of the things that people build.
Right. So this is not just have to be you, but this can be everyone now. And yeah. You seem to have a, I mean, I'm seeing that like there are things viewed by hundreds of people.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we've had some huge, once in a while, one of these things will go crazy, you know, and just get like 150,000 views or something. You're like, whoa, you know, it's all still new and exciting to me.
And you can log in via GitHub. Is that sort of like going to a social network via Facebook?
Yeah, it is. But it's also just, it was easy for us to get started to not have to worry about login. Let's just outsource that part. Something else. And then you get some side benefits to it, like the things that you build here in CodePen, you can just click a button and export it to your GitHub, so you're not 100% relying on CodePen to host that code for you. You can save it out elsewhere.
Right, like because so many things have died in our industry. I'm loving Foursquare now, but I used to, you know, I had like whole cities that I'd erected in Gowalla, and then one day it was gone.
I feel like we should have a moment of silence again every time we mention that.
I know. I feel bad for the people from Gowalla. They've moved on. They're working at Facebook now. I'm sure they're very happy, but it's got to be, it's like when people keep on making comments about Nazis. Like if I were German, I'd be like, can you stop already?
Yeah.
It's been 70 years, guys. Give us a break.
Right? I know. I just saw Argo last night, and I kind of felt bad for anybody that was from Iran, because I'm like, not really, but it's that same kind of thing. Like, can we stop thinking of Iran as people that burn American flags in streets? Because we're mostly not like that.
Yeah.
Follow developers, have other developers follow you. You go, get inspired, search around for navigation techniques. All that stuff is available on CodePen to look for. So it's that social layer and that playing layer and education. And it's cool, and there's lots of features to come.
Do you want to give us a hint on some of those features, or?
Sure, I could do that. This is a exclusive breaking news.
Yeah.
Because we're getting close. So, and I say we're, because this isn't just me. There's a three-man team that works on CodePen. And there's some friends of mine who worked with me at Wufoo and then later SurveyMonkey too, and they're still there. So we all kind of work on this part-time, because I kind of consider CS Tricks now finally my main job.
That was going to be my next question, but go ahead. So tell us the breaking news first.
Okay. Well, there's going to be pro accounts, and right, because right now everything on CodePen is free and you sign up through GitHub. And we want to someday grow this into a app that, you know, makes three people's salary worth of money. I feel like that's a pretty average goal for a web app like this.
So you know what? I think that's totally realistic. We're in a new age, right? Moore's law is still in effect. Computing speed is still doubling. We have no idea what the future is going to be. It's coming at us really fast. Devices are coming online. This is the new, to me, it's the new industrial revolution, right?
It is.
So it used to be we made things. Now we're not doing that. We're not making physical things. We're making digital things. And it's a real business. And if you've got a community for people who are making the digital future, it seems to me you ought to at least be able to, you know, have a little house out of that, or at least a garage.
Right. I'm not trying to run a 100-person company here. I think we have some compelling stuff that we can offer to the right amount of people that, and if, you know, we get enough of them, we have the salaries for three people. That's my goal.
That's cool. That's a good business goal. And I love small companies myself. So what are some of the features coming besides?
Well, I'll keep some of them a secret because some of them are like really cool and I don't want anybody to start working on them just yet. But here's one of them. If you sign up for Pro, which we're shooting, I think generously within the next couple months, we'll have this out. And so you open up one of the things that you've built. We call them pens, the things that you build. And you kind of go up and pick share and get a URL that's called collab view. And so my view of my editor now has collab in it instead of pen, but I could share it with you and then we can type together. So it's basically pair programming, but from anywhere in the world, right? So I see your cursor, you see my cursor. It's like Google Docs, only what you type then gets live rendered below, so you can see the results of it happening.
Oh my, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. And I mentioned that one because that's not totally groundbreaking. There's some other apps that have a little bit of that live stuff in it. But I think ours is going to be really nice and cool. And so look forward to that. That's called CollabView. And it works up to 5 people, too. So it's not just pair programming, but it's a number of people can work on it. And then fork off little parts of it where they want to. And, you know, it's all the social stuff that comes along with CodePen comes in there.
How much client services work are you still doing?
No, I haven't done any freelance in a while. Once in a while, I'll work on a site for a friend or something, but there's usually no money involved.
When did you stop freelancing, and how did you know it was time? How did you know I have enough money, or this is secure? This is
the magic question. But I what's interesting is I'd never really. Was a full-time freelancer. So I worked at an agency way back. That was my first web job, was for a small agency, and they kind of discouraged freelancing. They're like, why don't you bring it in and then you can work on it in the day? And the advantage being, I don't know, I guess you get to pick your own clients or something, but they rather discouraged it. And I was busy enough that I didn't bother to do much side work. And then I went right from there to working on an app, Woofoo. And I don't think they would have cared if I freelanced, but we were just so busy, and it was such a good job anyway that I didn't freelance. And then we were bought by SurveyMonkey, and I didn't freelance then. So I've never really been a client services guy.
When did you know you could quit your job?
Well, that was just a kind of a leap of faith. I'm in California right now. That's because when Woofoo got bought, we all moved out here to California. And I was happy working at SurveyMonkey, but it was time for something new for me. And I just didn't quite know how to handle it. CSS Tricks has grown in the revenue that it makes pretty consistently for all those years, but I never really thought of it as a full-time thing. And then I was just like, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to suck it up and do it. And right away, my idea then was to do a Kickstarter. So that's my big story in the last few months, was that I'm gonna redesign CSS Tricks with the goal in mind of making it more profitable, making it more of a full-time thing for me, redesign with that as the main goal. And I was like, well, I'm gonna redesign anyway, but why don't I just turn the camera on as I do it and record me making all these decisions and working in Photoshop and bringing it to code and writing all the JavaScript and just record every second of me doing that. And I was like, I'm going to do that anyway. But what I'll do is I'll make those videos available if you back me on Kickstarter. So I ran this Kickstarter, and it did super well, right?
I heard it did really well. How did you end up? I think it was like you asked for $1,000 and got $1 million or something. It was some crazy thing, but it was something like that. I mean,
yeah, it was pretty much that. It was, you know, I asked for like $3,500, just saying, hey, this will cover like the lens that I had to buy to shoot the nice video of me talking and the thing, mm-hmm. and like just some costs. And I want to do this anyway. I'm not using Kickstarter in that, like, I want to start a bee colony and bee boxes cost this much money, and if I get this much money, then I can buy all the bee boxes that I need. I was more like,
not that there's anything wrong with it.
No, that's better. That's how Kickstarter was meant to be used, I think.
Right.
I kind of turned it on its head and just said, hey, if you want tickets to the show, you can buy them here for cheap, which I think they're starting to discourage now. So I think I kind of got in on the tail end of them even allowing that.
Well, good for
which
you.
Is, yeah, whatever, right? It worked out. And so I asked for $3,500 and ended up getting almost $90,000. That's pretty good.
That ain't bad. That ain't bad.
And a bunch of people got their shirts and access to the videos, and now it's a done deal.
You have shirts too?
I do have shirts. We made a bunch of Kickstarter exclusive shirts. And
What?
I'll send you a
shirt. Are they threadless? Who?
No, it's a really awesome company. You should check it out, called realthread.com. They do what is called, I gotta look it up too, just so I get the name correct. I know Real Thread is correct, but they call it water-based and discharge printing.
Yes.
So it's not screen printing, or maybe they do use a screen, but they do it in some different way that it's not like thick ink on the shirt. It kind of feels really pushed into the shirt and feels really nice and natural. Doesn't work for every design in the world, but yeah, it's the end result. Sure, it looks.
Let me ask you this: are they built for like skinny 20-year-olds with a V shape?
I'm not a skinny yet. No, yeah. I don't wear V necks. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I also made sure to pick a shirt that came up to 3X because I'm kind of a big guy too. So
yeah, no, good.
Yeah,
because those people, they don't need the shirts. They look good in anything.
I know. Come
we
on.
Need the shirts. We need the shirts.
Shirts for awkward men.
I think, you know, a certain manliness, you know, a certain amount of manliness.
Yep. Yeah. I agree. But it's hard to skinny on top.
Lightning round.
Well, that's my life story. Yeah. Hit me.
Baseline grid.
We talked about this on Twitter this morning. There was a little hot drama on it. I like the idea of like, you know, have you seen Typecast app? It's kind of nice. Like, mm-hmm. I like the idea of starting out with one, making your type choices based on a baseline grid. Be like, okay, I set some type. It looks good. It's on a baseline grid. And then kind of forget about it. Don't like enforce it all the way up and down your page and through the sidebar and yada, yada, like in this intense way. Just kind of let it.
Especially if you're doing responsive design or have any inset images, whatever.
Ever or anything or a or video. Anything
right yeah. as soon as you inset anything, unless you know, the only way to do it is go, okay, I have this discipline, everything's 4:3 and must be 4:3 and here are my exact sizes of images,
right? Or you're making like an editorial crop to pull off 2 pixels from the bottom of it so it doesn't mess up your grid. That's just right.
And then I mean, you can do that, but then it's not responsive. It's a different kind of, it's really print design for the web. It's really a different thing,
right? And you're matching, you might be forcing a design to have to match the baseline grid for a bunch of text that isn't even visible because you've scrolled it away.
Or, oh, nice. Good one. Or isn't going to work that way on an Android anyway.
There you go. Right. Let things go.
And to be fair, since I just took a little ding at Android, retina display, lightning round, retina display. What are you doing?
Not a whole bunch, but I use some of the, you know, some of the Dave Rupert stuff from Mo Pixels, Mo Problems, kind of that. Let's make it a little bit bigger sometimes. Some of our big graphics, you know, just let's scale it. Let's make it a little bit, not 2X, but 1.5-ish. Or I usually don't even do the math in my head for a lot of things. I just like make it a little bit bigger and scale it down a little bit. We talked on Twitter a little bit about that the retina media queries I posted at one point
Go ahead.
Do you remember that?
Sorry.
No, that's okay. It was basically madness was I think the word you used.
Now I remember. Now I remember. Good.
Okay. Yes. It was a huge block of media queries that you need in which to determine that you're for sure on a retina display.
And by the way, I didn't think what you were doing. I thought what you were doing made sense. I thought our industry was in madness. Like, I still come from the background of like web standards, you know, totally. Design once, publish anywhere. Too. And I was just like, well, okay, so this will do it. And then, you know, it's sort of like when people used to say, it's easy, just have these 5,000 lines of JavaScript. And I'd be like, something's fundamentally wrong with our industry if we have to do that. And again, the cleverness of the solution was awesome. But the fact that we're, yeah, so I don't
it does.
Know.
It does look crazy, you know, and it's kind of the way it is. But it's, you know, just to bring it back to a list apart again, it falls into that prefix or post hack kind of thing. Like, do you want to live with this madness now so that it's better later, or do you want to not use these prefixes and worry about broken implementations? It's tough.
Nice reference to Eric Meyer's piece. You're you're very good at arguing your position, sir.
Thank you. I think what I posted there was, well, I know why I posted it. And it was a real life thing. And it's kind of, I think it's some of the filament group kids that have termed this, but I like this term lately. It's hero graphics. Mm-hmm. Where it's kind of like graphics on your page that are like a big deal. Like if you do some full page background graphic or some huge element on your page or even a video or something, that's like the main point of the page, or it has a big deal to do with that page. It's not just like some little image in a blog post or whatever. It's like a big deal. It's a big part of page. So I like the word hero graphic. And that like I have this new area. So those Kickstarter videos I released on CSS Tricks at css-tricks.com/lodge. And if you go to that URL, you'll see part of the design of that page is this big snowy cabin background graphic. And it's like big. It's just a huge graphic.
The lodge, so, right? The members only area.
Yeah. So there's the, I would call that big snowy cabin graphic in the back a hero graphic.
Yes.
Because it's everywhere. I would use those media queries for all six of those scenarios. The six scenarios being a small screen that's not Retina. I have an image of that snowy cabin that's just very small and efficient. Then I have a small screen that is Retina for like my 4S or 5 now. That it just, that low res graphic will look kind of crappy. So I have a small graphic, but it's Retina, you know, it's bigger. And then the same thing for tablet-ish size and tablet-ish size that's Retina and desktop size that's Retina. Now, it doesn't take into account so many other things. I know this isn't the whole story of how Retina goes down. I mean, there's bandwidth concerns, there's user desired concerns, there's all this stuff, but at least it helps a little bit. At least I'm doing something to make sure that that giant hero graphic on the page is trying to be efficient for all those six scenarios.
I think what you just said sounds like a terrific article and a terrific video. I'm wondering if it is an article on CSS Tricks or video on CSS Tricks.
Should be.
And here's my last lightning round question. When will you write for A List Apart?
I will. Maybe that would be a good one. Although I think Dave kind of covered it pretty recently. Maybe I can put a twist on it or something. I tried to in the past once, but it wasn't a big deal. It just wasn't. I was a crappier writer then, and it ended up getting rejected.
I regret that so deeply.
No, it's okay. Turned out to be a pretty good article on CSS Tricks, though.
There you go. Anyway. A lot of times I think we often say that this seems like a really great blog post. It's missing something to be a list apart, but it's a really, really good piece. So. Yeah.
And that just means that that's good, right? I mean, it's not like I ever cared. It's just, it means you have a quality publication. You don't just publish everything that gets submitted your way. What's your reject rate?
Our reject rate is high, but I don't really want to say that because we've sort of frightened people away. I think if you read A List of Parts contribute area, so we got a redesign coming. It's coming very soon, like the beginning of the year. And we've got we got new features too and stuff, but we're going to rewrite that section because I think right now it says, we don't want just some article.
Yeah.
If you're just telling us how to do a good job, you could pretty much screw off. We don't want to, I think, and it's not like that. It wasn't meant in that spirit, but I think it can be taken as, so take your little article somewhere else, and we don't want that because, you know.
But you get some from that, and you get some from having people that actively ask people. I mean, you just actively asked me to write an article.
Exactly. No, we do a lot of recruiting. We have Rose is our acquisitions editor. She's amazing, and
that's awesome.
I do a lot of that. I'll go.
I bet you get a lot of yeses too, right? Because that's extreme flattery.
We
say no to Jeffrey.
We get a lot of yeses, but we don't always get follow through. Like everything else in life, right?
Oh, I see. Yeah, of course they say yes and then don't do it. That's sad. Do that to me.
Listen, this has been terrific. I want to do it again. And in fact, we are going to do it again because I'm going to be on your podcast next, correct?
Yay. Yeah. We like to do that crossover thing. So we'll have Jeffrey on and we'll have people. So if anybody has questions I was hoping to ask you more questions, but I guess we'll save that for Shop Talk Show.
Save it for Shop Talk. Exactly.
Okay. That's in about a month. So watch for that, folks. And thanks so much for having me on the show. It's been great.
A real pleasure. Thank you very much. And, thanks to our listeners. We'll be back with another Big Web Show soon. Thanks also to our sponsor, An Event Apart. I've heard it's a good show. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.